Real Business Owners.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast. This is episode 35. You got myself, Trevor Cowley, and then you got Kilo G.
What's up?
On mic two. On mic three, we've got a special guest for you guys today. I know the last four, I think, have been just me and Kel rolling solo. But guys, today we have a guest. His name is Brent Skinner. He owns a company called Brand Makers. He's been through many ups and downs, as all entrepreneurs have. We just want to bring you guys information to let you know that you're not alone in the journey. It is difficult. It is tough. It is hard. Mm-hmm. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train. You know, you'll pop out the other side and be fine. So, Brent, welcome. We appreciate you coming on, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're excited to have you.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been talking about it for a minute, haven't we? I'm like, dude, I got to get you on.
Yeah, I think we guys first started rolling with this. We started chatting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's been probably 20 weeks or so since it was probably episode 10 or something. Yeah. I was like, dude, I need to get you on, or you know, whatever it is. But
guys, I used to see him at the gym and talk about it a little bit too, that one or two times. Yeah. But he got a home gym put in, man, so I don't see him there no more.
I know. Yeah.
Let's just put it this way. You work hard enough and go through all those struggles, you can have a home gym too.
You don't got to fight the crowds anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no, you don't got to worry about January rush.
No, I'm telling you, that's actually been funny, this last little part, because seeing all the posts and the funny jokes about it, and I'm like, there's no crowd.
Like,
here.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's my happy place.
Start
it's
selling
thing.
Memberships.
Don't give your address out, man, because I'll show up along with some other people. You know?
Exactly. You know, people tell me that all the time, and no one's taking me up on it. No, one guy has. One neighbor, he started coming in a few times.
Just a few times?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think he's getting consistent. Now he'll text me, is the gym open? I'm like, the gym's always open. Yeah. Like, come anytime you want.
Just put a tip jar on the the exit, you know?
So he's great. He wants to build me a rack, actually, for the dumbbells.
Oh, good, good.
He's like, I got to pay my dues if I'm coming.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah,
that's a fair trade-off.
Yeah, exactly. So, dude, tell us a little bit about, one, how long have you been in business? Let's start there.
10 years. So 10 years. We passed our 10-year mark.
Good. So when you say we, you have partners?
I do. Yeah, okay. I've got partners. I actually came in right towards the end of year one.
Okay.
So these guys started it, and then the opportunity kind of fell in my lap. I didn't even know what it was exactly at the time.
What were you doing before that?
Struggling, honestly. Yeah. So I had done really well. I had kind of the rags to riches to rags type situation. So at the time this came up, I had just lost everything. I had nothing.
Like, really?
We'd lost our homes.
Like
all the
foreclosed
toys.
On it or just sold
no,
it?
No, short you know? Sold. We had a short sell. The market went nuts.
Yeah.
So we ended up short selling 4 homes because the market just couldn't sustain it. And
so you were doing well.
Absolutely.
Enough to be able to start buying rental properties.
Yeah.
And then when the market took a shit, there goes everything that you worked for out the window. You're short selling your properties, just liquidating to, you know, try to survive.
Yeah, to back up a little bit, to give a little bit of context. So so right out of college, I was pre-med, did all the biology, chemistry,
you're a smart dude. You're one of those guys.
At times. Well, I studied hard. I studied hard. I don't know that it came naturally, but I studied really, really hard in college. And so I just finished all that, and I was trying to figure out grad schools to go to. And a buddy I was in the military with, he started doing lending down here. And if you remember, like, that timeline, 2004, 5, 6, it was intense.
Yeah, people were putting their own interest rate on.
It was insane, right?
Prime's 5, but you're going to have 7% interest so I could sell it and make this much money
out
off of the loan. Yeah.
And the commissions were ridiculous.
Exactly.
So I had time to kill, so I did. I jumped on board. I bought this house going to college. I bought a house as a sophomore.
Okay.
I was delivering pizzas for Domino's. My wife was managing the theaters.
Were you here in St. George during
Cedar.
All this?
Yeah, I was going to college, SUU.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so I started driving. I was around town delivering pizzas, and I always saw these houses, and I'm like, I wonder what the numbers look like. Like, that house is like 80 grand.
Yeah.
How does that compare to my $600 rent?
Yeah.
So I started doing the numbers, and I was like, I could own that for like within $30 what I'm paying in rent. So I had a little bit of military income, had GI Bill, and then I was in the military. So between that, delivering pizzas, a little bit of income from theater. Ended up buying a house sophomore year. When I sold it, I bought it for like 80 and sold it for 160. So
good,
when I graduated,
that's cool.
I kind of got real estate in my mind a little bit.
It was
an accidental profit. Like, I had
fell
no idea.
Into something good, and you're like, there might be something here.
Yeah. Well, I remember I can do this over and over.
Yeah,
I called the agent a gal that I knew in town, and she's like, I think I could sell this pretty quick for 160. And I legitimately respond to her and say, oh, I don't got to be greedy. Like, I that feels like really mean. And she's like, no, like, that's the market right now. Like, that's just it. I thought she was just being, like, a total a-hole and just being, like, trying to look for a
trying
commission.
To freaking
I didn't understand anything.
Jack up the price.
No, so I was hesitant. She's like, no, I promise you, you'll get that. And we did, like, really quick. So had a little bit of money, had time to kill. Cool. Started doing lending. After a year, we opened up our own branch and mortgage lending.
Yeah, that's when we went into mortgage lending.
And just started killing it. Yeah. And before I knew it, I was like, I'm making more than these doctors.
Yeah.
So fast forward a couple of years, too much money, make dumb choices. We built this massive house, almost 8,000 square foot house out in Washington. Not right by where you're at, actually. Not too far off from there. You'll know the house.
I have such a similar story, man.
I was just going to say. But this is the shit that we talk about and that we preach to other people about. Dude. Right when you see six figures or $200,000, $400,000, dude, the
lifestyle increases.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Yeah, you just feel like on top of the world. Like, this is never going to go away. I'm going to just – it's only going to go up from here, right? Everybody's thinking like – wow. You know, nobody wants to look backwards and be like, man, if I ever go back to making 50 grand a year, then I'm going to be in trouble. Nobody thinks about shit like that. And so it's just, it's always living but beneath your means is a good strategy.
Right. And I failed miserably. Yeah.
Dude, most people do have to fail their way to that lesson, which is the unfortunate part about it, which ended up causing some headaches and some struggles.
Yeah. So we're getting there. So life was good. This house was legitimately still to this day is probably my dream house. If money wasn't the factor and it just I would probably build that house again. It had everything I wanted, just absolutely phenomenal. So during that build process, market starts to slow, builder gets in trouble, starts using funds from other build jobs to finance other things. Anyway, it hurt us, so we lost about $250,000 on that money that didn't go to the subs that I ended up started trying to float and help them. I went face to face and paid them money and did different things, even though like the money had been paid.
Yeah.
It just didn't make it from
one hand to the other. There was a middleman just taking it off the top.
Exactly. So all the money had been paid, just didn't make it to where it needed to go. So that created a problem. We made some other investments, some big investments around $250,000 with another partner. Same time. So within a 6 month period, we were like basically $500,000
out the door.
Yeah. Which maybe spaced out over a period. I mean, even then, that's not easy to overcome, but let alone in a short time, you know, combine that with the changes in the market and values just tanked around 2008.
Yeah.
You know, 2008.
So
9.
You were in it from 04 to 08?
Yeah. So I had been in this home about a year and a half when things, well, when we were actually building, things started to get ugly. But then I had been there about a year and a half just kind of battling it. Finally said, so here's the crazy thing. So I was just beaten down. Like the market was changed. I started to question if this is really what I wanted to do. I started thinking, man, do I go back to grad school? Like I got to go take the tests and, you know, and maybe take that route. But it's just not in my head anymore.
Isn't it so funny when you hit struggles? Even as sales guys, like me and Kel, I mean, we were sales reps. I mean, there were some times as a sales guy, if you have like a bad month or something, you're like, should I go back to school? Or should I go to school? We didn't go to school. So
I joined
it's like,
the military.
Yeah, like what do I do? Like all of these thoughts of like, what do I do now? You know, when you hit that little skid of struggle, you know, and so we've been there, but more on the sales side, and you just have a bad month or two, and you're like, is it even for me anymore? You know?
Oh, I started questioning everything, from back to the day I chose to not just hold out and go to grad school, and from then, and why I even started this, and because I didn't take a single business class, I didn't take an accounting class. It was my generals, and it was chemistry and biology. It was just all the prerequisites for med school. So I didn't have any background in that, and it just learned as you go. And I was so desperate and beaten down. Like, my mentality is so different now, but back then,
You were young.
I was young and defeated. Dumb, and I just was defeated, right?
Yeah.
I called up my buddy at the pizza joint and went back to driving pizzas at night, and I was still living in that house. So I'm working the day, and in the day, just trying to
keep our head afloat.
Keep head afloat. But I'm like, I also felt this obligation to make money for the family, like even if it was, which is funny because it was pennies, right? I mean, paydays would be 20, 30 grand a lot of times in the mortgages. It was crazy. And then I was I'd make $6,000 a year driving pizza.
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know how much that extra little tiny bit helped, but maybe for me therapeutically, like, it was like I'm doing something. I'm not just giving up completely.
Yeah.
But inside, like, I'd kind of given up a lot. Like,
yeah.
You went from making that to driving pizzas. Nothing against it. It's just that's not what I – that wasn't my ceiling. I knew I'd been here. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah, no matter who you are as an individual, that you have to check your ego in doing something like that. Yeah. And when you don't get to the point of making, you know, $500,000 a year doing mortgages or whatever by not having a little bit of confidence and ego, right?
Right.
So – to put that aside and be able to deliver pizzas, dude, I would say 99% of people wouldn't be willing to do it.
It was humbling beyond belief. It was hard. I mean, there were tearful nights. It was just that decision. Like, I remember calling him and just saying, listen, bro, like, what do you got? You good? Yeah. He's like, oh, you still know the business. Just consider yourself hired. So I started up. So I'd struggle all day. We'd kind of battle it, try to fight through the market, figure out different ways. We started marketing better, and it was working, but it wasn't the numbers. It wasn't the same level that it had been. So I'm driving pizzas at night, and then I'm coming back to this $2.4 million house, and, you know, taking my Domino's sign off, putting it in, and just a strange, strange time.
Yeah.
So then I had this night. I'm driving pizzas. I think this was my breaking point. And I'm driving pizzas, and I pull up to this house. I didn't even notice the name on the order.
On the delivery.
Right. I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
So pull up, and a buddy from high school answers the door. And just, you could imagine, like, in my head, I have no idea what he was thinking. But in my head, I knew. I was in my head, I'm thinking, oh, this guy's like, well, man, Brent's really made something of himself, you know?
Yeah.
Here we are, close to 30 years old.
Yeah.
He's delivering pizzas, and, you know, this kid who thought he'd have, you know,
so did he give you a good tip? Up?
I don't remember.
Asshole.
Dude, I was, my head was so out of it.
He didn't even look at the tip.
You were in a daze all of a sudden. You're like, is this even happening right now?
It was a hard, hard moment. So I went back. So I got that delivery done. And I got back home. And, like, I pulled in the garage. And I just sat there. And I, like, broke down. I'm like, this is bad. Like, something's got to change. But that, like, broke me. That was, like, I think my, you know, you have to get that point where it's just, you make this decision.
Enough is enough.
This was it. Yeah, that was it for me. So
you've got to hit a breaking point.
Dude, mine was on the solar game, dude, because my business was still running. In fact, Trevor was home managing stuff. Yeah. And I was, like, not making near what I used to make. So I'm knocking doors selling solar down in Southern California. And, dude, I had the same breaking point where I was just like, what the hell am I doing? Right. If I was working this hard on my business, I'm capable of so much more. Yeah. So I was, like, grateful for that whole period of, like, because, dude, I was only making, like, our business went from making, I was taking in 50 grand a month to only making 5 grand a month, but I had to pay my ex-wife 6.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Working. So I was like, I was at those tearful moments as well, but I'm so grateful for it because that's where you start finally realizing, like, dude, I'm better than this. Like, I have more potential than this. You know, and so it kind of forces you to go all in on you again.
That was exact moment. Like, I literally sat in my garage and I just sat and cried. It was embarrassing, but, like, that was it for me. Like, so that was the moment. And my wife and I had this conversation. Like, you know what? We can always go stay with my parents in Idle Falls, and we can figure something else out for the time. Because I had exhausted, like, every dollar I had, essentially, just kind of fighting the lawsuits.
Yeah.
With the house to get everybody paid back. And, like, I was done. I couldn't fight anymore. It just wasn't worth it. So we had that conversation, and that's what we did. We went up there, and at the same time, I had a job offer. It was a 6-figure job offer back doing lending in Orem, plus bonuses and commissions and stuff. Super tempting.
Yeah.
But I knew that that industry wasn't for me anymore. Like, I had completely checked out. I had no interest in it at all.
It basically was tainted.
Yeah, it was, point. And I just couldn't do it.
You couldn't love it again.
Yeah, like, I knew it wasn't my future, and so this brand maker's job came up, and a buddy made a post on Facebook, just kind of a, hey, I'm starting an Idaho branch, who's in? And I responded, and I'm like, I'm game, I don't know what you do, but let's chat. And so he called me, and this kid I'd known, I hadn't seen him probably in 10 years. I just kind of met him, probably 10 years before I even seen this kid before. Just following Facebook, catching up. And we chat, and he's like, well, we have no salary. There's no commission. It's all commission.
Yeah.
No guarantees.
It's startup, baby.
It's just all startup. Like, we haven't even been in business for a year.
Yeah.
And
anybody with common sense would say, fuck that.
Exactly. That guy was probably at a breaking point, too. He's like, I need a good partner.
Exactly. So right before, so I had actually, not wanting to, But I actually accepted that other gig just because I had to have something, right?
Yeah.
So I did it for the family type thing. No, I didn't want to. So this was like on a Friday.
Okay.
And then he calls me and I'm like, dude, I literally just got off the phone call, like my entry phone call with them, and I'm supposed to go check in on Monday. So and he's like, oh, you got your options. I mean, here's what we do. But he kept posting with like UFC fighters, and he was big with the PBR and stuff. And so I'm like, I don't know what you do, but you're always with cool people and yeah. You know, cool places. He's like, oh, we do apparel. We do brand and merchandising and swag. And I work with UFC fighters and work with the PBR and Cooper Tires, and they're a big sponsor. And it sounded cool. And I thought about it. So that I get off that phone that next morning, Saturday. I go fishing with some family, just kind of thinking about it. And the whole mm-hmm. day I'm just thinking, man, what do I do?
Yeah.
Like, I'm broke. I have nothing. Like this. Then I have this guarantee that's going to get me not where I want to be, but it's a better start.
It provides for the family.
Yeah. I have nothing. So
yeah.
I get back home. My wife did the same thing. She went off with her family, her girlfriends and mom and stuff. And get back that night. And we both was like, I think we need to take the brand maker's job. Like, it makes no sense. But we have family to live with. So our debts are low. We just lost everything. So we really have no payment.
You can't go any lower.
Yeah. My cars are paid off, fortunately. Yeah. So that was the good part of it. I didn't have any other debt because what I had, I'd already short sold.
Yeah.
And it took me two months to make a first commission. I made $73. And I'm like, how is this the right choice?
Yeah.
I didn't have an office. So I went in my in-laws' driveway. They had a trailer. And it was cold. It was winter in Idaho Falls. And so I went out in his fifth wheel type trailer in the driveway and started making cold calls as we'd travel back and forth. My wife had a notebook and she'd write down businesses. And we'd pass a trucking company and I'd be like, write that down. And then when we get back home, I'd get on the phone and I'd call them. And they started calling racing circuits. Every time I saw a 5K at the gym, they post the flyers up.
Yeah.
I'd call that 5K and be like, hey, can we help you out with shirts? And then like, oh yeah, I know. And I know this race director. And it started to snowball. And then I started getting some marathons and half marathons and then working all over the country. And I started seeing there's some potential to it. And then we started to grow and grow. And I'm like, okay, we're almost to the point where I can actually move out on my own again, right? So I found this little rental down the street, one block away from my in-laws.
Mm.
Started paying some rent and then growing it. And then next thing I know, like I see some A-list people at this event I'm at. I'm like, I'm going to talk to those guys.
Heck yeah.
So I walk up and I just make a quick, there's a big line, right, to meet them, get autographs. And as I'm going through, I'm just like, hey, I love you guys' stuff. I love your show. It's been fun to watch. Like, I help with marketing and branding. If you guys want to brand yourselves, apparel, stuff like that, quick little, they're like, actually, yeah, we could use that. Like the outdoor channel or whatever it was, like they handle, or history, I think they do some of it, but we can do our own private branding.
Yeah.
They're like, call my agent. All right, cool. Didn't think anything of it, but reach out to his agent. He's like, come out to LA and meet me. So I go out to LA, sit down and meet him. We hit it off. And then this guy just starts setting me up with all these other like people other that he represents.
Yeah.
So like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and these other channels and some of the like the Wicked Tuna shows and stuff that are, on the East Coast are out fishing. And it just starts kind of snowballing from there. And at the same time, like I'm still working in a
trailer
for a time. And then when he went into the rental, I had a little storage room down there because I didn't have an office up there. They were still building it.
Yeah.
And this whole time I'm like, I kind of feel like I'm kind of balling, but not balling. Like, like things are starting to happen again.
Balling out of the trailer.
Yeah. But they don't know where I'm at.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And
you're
so
around ballers. So that, isn't that funny?
I know.
Guilty by association. So, you put yourself around the ballers. Yeah, you start feeling like a baller.
Oh, it's hilarious. So it just kind of started snowball from there. And I've had my business partners are studs, right? And so they're all hustling. And at this time, there's really only the partners are the sales guys, right? We had no other additional sales force, really.
Yeah.
So my two things when I agreed to take this job, I should back up. I said, like, I do want ownership. I don't want to be a sales guy forever. Like, I want, if I'm doing this, I'm in, like, as a partner. And then I also want to come back to Southern Utah. I don't want to be out of Falls for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And they agreed to both. They said, absolutely, upfront, that was the deal. So I just learned the business. And
well, when you bring that much value, it's crazy how that happens, right? They're like, hell yeah, we want you as a partner.
Yeah, yeah. So we did. They said, you gotta sell a million. You got to be a $1 million rep. And so, we ramped up to that pretty quickly. And they followed through and made me a partner. But we, like, after year four, we hit eight figures in the business. And then we've just been growing steadily and steadily from there. But
how many reps do you guys have now?
So now we have 19 sales reps, and we've got about 35 office staff that, with it between the accounting and the CSRs.
Or
and the system.
Did you guys have a hard time keeping up, scaling fulfillment and all that? Like, you start bringing in all these big orders, man, you've had to probably grow your...
Yeah, we have. We have. So we've got a lot of partners in the printing side. And so we print from between LA and Virginia. We've got a dozen different shops.
Yeah.
So we're within 1 to 2 day ship of anywhere in the nation if it's apparel cool. related. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so after about year two, we started really fine tuning the overseas side of it. So we've been over to China, I think, 5 times, just doing real custom type branding situations, things that, so that not everybody can offer.
Yeah.
So we've really fine tuned that over the years. I remember it was sketchy too at first though. So I had a big university, I remember ordering, they had like 10,000 earbuds. We did everything right. Prototypes, samples, everything was money. We put the order in and all 10,000 of them come, and down one side it was written right and the other side it was upside down and like backwards. So it didn't make any sense. And so he's like, bro, I got 10,000 of these.
I'd be like, I'll give you a half off because only one, dude, you can only tell what one is.
And so. I'm sweating bullets. I'm like, this was like my first big university. Yeah. This is one of my first, like, biggest orders.
Yeah.
Ended up kind of laughing it off. And we kind of made a joke. I was like, well, it's freshmen, right? Freshmen will take what freshmen get. And so they ended up doing that. They threw them all in the freshman kits. And we comped the entire order. I like, they ended up flush. They got the earbuds. They paid nothing.
Yeah.
And to this day, they finished the year in my top five every single year. And it's been almost 10 years now. So,
that's awesome.
So it kind of strengthened the relationship. Like, anyway, but it was sketchy, like starting to work overseas and
that's the thing through those struggles. Dude, well, this is the thing is, as you're growing and as you're doing different things, there's going to be issues.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so you're probably excited about this, but, and then you went from a high to a low when you saw that. And then, hindsight now being 8 years later, 9 years later, 10 years later, I actually believe that that probably gave you an opportunity, like you said, to strengthen the relationship, to show that you have integrity, to show that you're willing, hey, I screwed up. That's on me. Mm-hmm. Let us take care of it. Give this to your friend. You turn something that was negative into a positive, and then they saw that like, holy shit, these guys make it right.
Yeah.
So these are the type of people that I want to do business with for a long time.
Mm.
So I think too many people have a scenario that feels negative in the moment, but if you end up doing the right thing, it will pay for itself 10 times over. Over the course of time.
That's how you compound a business, man. Like, that's how shit snowballs.
Yeah.
But what I liked in this story is, dude, you built your business the same way we built ours. Networking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not being afraid to put yourself out there. Like, so many people, like, someone invites you to LA and you're like, you don't care what your financial situation is, working out of a trailer, living with your in-laws. You're like, dude, I'm going to find a way to buy my plane ticket and get my ass to LA and meet these guys.
Oh, that's, you bring up, you know what I mean? I didn't mention that. I barely had money to get there. That was the thing. Yeah.
I picked up on that. You know what I mean? Because I've done that too.
Stretch.
It's like, dude, I've had to drive my ass up to Salt Lake and jump on a flight when I didn't know how I was going to get the money just to be like, get the damn deal done, you know? Yeah. And so a lot of people, they skip that. Man.
I can't afford that right now. I'm not there yet.
Or they
continue to have a small mind, so they don't go after the big fish because they're sitting in a trailer at their in-laws' house. What idiot would call a large company or go to agents and celebrities or whoever it is and think that they can earn that person's business with the state that they're in right there? Mm-hmm. So the difference is a lot of people project their state where they're at and then make a decision for other people saying, well, they probably won't do it, so therefore they don't make the phone call or they don't send that email, right? Because who would want to do business with me? I'm new, I'm a startup, I'm this or that. Again, they're projecting their own insecurities into their business, and it's actually hurting their business more so than anything else because whether they don't believe that they're worthy of it, whatever it is, there's something there subconsciously stopping them from making that call or that email because they believe that they're not going to get the response that they want anyways.
Yeah.
And you've got to go into the deal just fucking relentless. Just do it. Pick up the phone. Make the call. Send the email. Go to that networking event. Put yourself out there. You know, whatever it is. And it's all of those little teeny things that really make the difference.
The common denominator in everybody that we ever have on the show that's done big shit, built 8-figure businesses plus, is find a way. Mm-hmm. That's the three words, man. They find a way. They find a way to get the business rolling. When an order goes wrong, they find a way to make it right with the new customer. They find a way, you know, to get the order filled when that's a challenge. You know, they find a way. That's really the biggest common denominator with everybody, us and all the guests we ever have on the show. Is like, dude, people overthink this shit.
Yeah.
Just find a way.
Like,
you know,
it's fucking hard for us too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like some people might look at the gram or look at this and be like, damn, they're making it look easy. No, that's bullshit. This stuff is hard. Absolutely. Like you even know this still to this day, even having a business that does eight figures over $10 million a year revenue, it doesn't get easier. The operations get bigger, meaning the problems that you have can get bigger.
Yeah.
You know, there's more at risk. There's more at stake. There's more people to worry about, whether it's your employees, more customers to worry about. This, it doesn't get any easier at all, and it actually gets more difficult. Like we talked about in a video game, every level you go to, it's going to get more and more difficult to pass that level. Let's just call it the 1 million mark. That's level one. Level two is 2 million, you know, whatever, right? Yeah. And so, guys, just so that you understand, I know that when you're going through some shit, you feel like you're the only person going through it. Find a way.
Yeah.
Like, there is a way. Like, don't wallow in your own shit. Like, dude, you went and delivered pizzas. You hit the breaking point. And I think we made a post about when you hit that breaking point mentally or financially, you'll finally make the change.
Absolutely.
People just haven't hit the breaking point yet, even though that they think that they have. They haven't gotten to the point where they're sitting in their car crying and breaking down.
You know what I mean? That's a hard moment.
Dude, that's some real shit, though.
And looking at yourself and just realizing that, like, this, seeing where you were to where you are in that moment and just accepting, okay, this is my current situation, but this isn't forever, right? This is where I'm at now, and I have to change this, like, as fast as I possibly can.
But I think a lot of people in that current situation, they try to numb themselves to it.
Right.
They don't want to feel
the
pain of that current situation, right? So they put themselves and their brain on autopilot. They wake up and they do their thing and they just go through life.
I've done
because
it,
because they like, don't want to deal with it because reality is hard to deal with. Like, that's the truth for everybody.
I remember telling myself all the time, like, this is just the hand I was dealt.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not in my cards to go and, you know,
do something great.
Be a boss, you know?
Like, they just have they're different. They're
the lucky ones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No,
I remember thinking that shit, dude.
Of course.
18, 19, 20 years old.
Everybody goes through those scenarios where there's the doubt and there's this and, you know, maybe they don't believe that they're cut out for it, but it's just not the truth. And it's just something that you're telling yourself just to make yourself feel better, to let yourself off the hook from owning your situation and changing that shit.
Do you ever, like, do you ever feel like there's a calling, like you're called to sales?
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever been in that situation? I think that's kind of a situation that happened with me. Like, I kind of felt like as I started to resolve, when I was considering other options, I kind of feel like I was always called to be in sales and like be my own boss and things. I remember clear back to when I was 14 years old, like I wanted to make a little extra money. So I started delivering newspapers and like I had a buddy had come with me and he was always some comic relief and he'd always crash on his, he'd always try stupid crap and he'd always crash.
Popping wheelies, jumping off curbs.
He had his handlebars turned backwards one time and he's like, you think I can flip them around while I'm riding? I'm like, of course you can. We're cruising. He tries to flip them, not lift up and flip, just flip them. And he'd,
just,
you know,
take a handlebar in the gut.
We had moments like that all the time and he'd pop up and be like, that was a bad idea. And I'm like, we're just 14, just cruising around a little town, small town, throwing newspapers. And then they had this competition to go to Ireland, right? Like that was it. Like you had to get the most new subscriptions and you win a trip to Ireland. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to win that. There's no doubt I'm going to win that. So I just started grinding and I did. I won. Like we got so many new subscriptions. And then I came down actually here to St. George when it was the Spectrum and did a face-to-face interview and I prepped like crazy. So my ancestry is Irish. Oh, so my mom prepped me the whole time. She's like, you got to answer. You got your McManus and McNinch and all this stuff. And
here's
all this
your
background.
Family crest. Here's what it looks like. You
so she's
know,
like, if they want to, my mom was like, she was sharp on this. She was like, listen, they're probably going to ask you why you should be this over to others. And she's like, you got heritage there. Like nobody in your family's ever gone back to visit. I'm like, that's genius. Yeah. So, I was rehearsed. I was prepped and I slayed it. Like there was five judges and all five, you know, picked me. They called me. They're like, yeah,
unanimous
won unanimously. And I'm like, all right. But it was also like, I think back on those times, like I think we're always kind of meant to sell and to, to be in that situation. And like when I had kind of given up on everything and got away from that, like nothing felt right. It was all just out of desperation, and it wasn't for, you know, it was just trying to sustain something, knowing that there was something bigger. I almost took another insurance job. Part of me was beaten so down that I just want a 9-to-5. Just give me the 9-to-5. Let me have some, because I was so broken from being so far up.
Yeah, you don't want the responsibility.
Well, I didn't want any of that responsibility. I was like, I want to know what I'm making. I want to know what my budget is. I don't want to question what my commissions are.
The reality is you understand how much stress can come along with that amount of money.
Huge amounts.
People don't understand that.
Yeah.
Right? With a large amount of money, life's supposed to be easy.
Right.
Just, you know, when you're making large amounts of money, it's probably based upon the fact that you're running a business and doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of pressure that comes with making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why you see even celebrities that, you know, use drugs and do this and do that, you know, they have family, friends, this, that, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, money doesn't make, like, you get some of the luxuries, you know, the car that maybe you sit in and drive to work is far nicer than somebody else's, and the house that you go to is far enough. But again, everybody's got struggles no matter the income level. And I think that's where some people screw up. It's like, man, I want to make a ton of money so all my problems go away.
Right. Yeah.
They only get bigger.
No, that's not the case at all. Yeah. I mean, there's problems. In any situation, there's problems.
Mm-hmm.
But they definitely don't go away. And we've struggled with that too. I mean, when we started making money, the business started growing again. Yeah. And I was still so gun-shy. I remember, so I brought in, when I finally decided I was back to the point where I felt safe doing some real estate, I brought in two partners to buy a $180,000 townhome. Like,
because
I was so gun shy. No, I was so scared.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I want to get my feet wet again, but I'm not ready to just jump in. And so I got a couple buddies, and we all went in together. Because I'm like, okay, worst case, if my life goes to crap again, I got at least these other two guys who hopefully theirs doesn't go to crap at the same time. So, in fact, that just went under contract too, 2 days ago. So we held it for 4 years. And got some money. We're gonna roll it. We're just doing it. Yeah, we're gonna 1031, roll it into something newer and bigger. Yeah. Nice, you know, cause keep rolling it through. So
that's what I was gonna ask you. Actually, is, you know, now that you've lived through those times of losing it all, it's like, what are some of the things you do now to insulate yourself from that? Because that's what we do. We learn from these.
Yeah.
These, you know, mistakes.
Yeah. Well, I didn't
I've
go out
do the same
and
thing.
Build another 8,000 square foot house. I came even when we came back here. I rented for a long time. And
that house was kind of a big commitment, you know.
This new
No, I'm saying like when you said you rented for a while, did you rent because you were gun shy on the house, or was because your credit was jacked up from some of the other stuff, or what?
No, you know, the credit actually bounced back pretty quick. Like, fortunately, it kind of fortuitous for me. I had some cards that I had opened with my dad. When I was like 16, and I was
credit
a co-signer
cards?
On, yeah, oh. And they never got used, and so. Even though everything was crap, I still had like tens of thousands of available credit that had no balance. So like, you know, things kind of bounced back really well.
Good.
That got me learning. Like, so I did the same for my daughter. You know, so I've got her on
a
new
bunch
cars
of your
now
cards.
And stuff.
Yeah,
she's my. I think my 17-year-old has like $80,000 in unused credit.
My
right
son,
now,
same thing.
So,
I have it on my credit card.
Yeah,
dude.
No, it's a good thing. That's a whole nother subject. But if you have family members that have bad credit, add them as an authorized user on your credit card.
Just don't give them a damn credit
don't
card.
Don't give them the card.
No, she didn't have the card.
In most cases, they have bad credit for a reason, but not in every case. But
I got ripped off for about $6,000 doing that once.
You did.
Adding someone to a credit card.
Oh, they actually
they
got the cards.
They racked that shit up and never could pay back.
Yeah, she definitely doesn't have the card. I've got the card in my possession, but I wanted to rent more just because I was a little bit nervous about. Well, one, when I first moved back here, I didn't know where I wanted to be. I knew I wanted to be in St. George, and that was about the extent of it.
Yeah.
But the decisions I've made this time around, now that things are a little more stable and secure, and the income level is quite a bit better than Domino's delivery, is just, you know, I analyze things a lot better. When I started making money, and I was like, oh, I got to have this. I got to have this house, right? Because the house matches
your income.
The money, the income, right?
Yeah, like, I got to let everybody know that I'm doing well.
And
yeah.
So I'm in a great neighborhood, and I often feel like I'm the low man on the totem pole, and I'm fine with that. I feel totally – I think it's more about being secure now. I don't have to impress anybody.
Yeah.
I'm like super content. Like, I think that's the biggest difference, is just being comfortable. Back then, what was I, 20? I was I was mid-20s and just making a killing and just didn't know better. Like, yeah. I got it, and I think it's like you said before, it's just common. But I fell into all the traps. Like, you listen to your podcast, the things you bring up, I pretty much checked them all off. Yeah. I did all the bad, all the wrong choices. And with money, and now, you know, I love what Stueman's, his rules of money. I've actually printed those off, and I've started following a lot more of that, too. And just living on as little as I can, you know. I've got some nice things now. I mean, I love my house. We built a new place, and it's great. But
yeah, everyone already knows you have a gym, a gym at your house. So they're probably picturing, like, a large, huge, open gym space.
No, you know what? I had a had a little garage space around back, and that's what I turned my gym into.
Yeah,
I actually took out the gym we designed to save some money. Because I was like, it'd be awesome to have, but it's not a necessity.
Yeah.
The old me would have been like, hell yeah,
let's do it
in that gym.
Let's add an indoor basketball court, indoor pool.
You cannot build a house like this and not have a gym. People don't do that. So, but I took that out. I was like, you know what? The costs are, you know, we're pushing my comfort level right now. I'm like, I don't want to go beyond. So we built the house to where I felt comfortable. We didn't do the other thing. We didn't like build the house and then be like, okay, now I got to find a way to make sure I pay for this. So, that's a difference.
Let me ask you this. You recently joined the, you know, Apex group, the group, one of the groups that we're a part of, that's an entrepreneurship group.
I was excited when I saw that deal. I was like, hell I'm excited for the next fly-ins.
It'll be fun. It'll be fun. But, like, let me ask you, like, why are you doing it? Your company's doing fine, right? Like, why continue to, you know, try to look at more options? What are you hoping to get out of an entrepreneurship group? Is it, you know, the network? Is it, you know, the network and more business? Is it just, you know, like, what's your thoughts on
that? Yeah, so that's a great question. So here's my business partners and actually everybody in the company, we are best friends. Like, we are really, really tight. It's crazy. Every time I think we add more people, like, you worry it might change the dynamic, but it's been amazing. Like, our camaraderie
is
just
staff and
legit.
That.
Oh, we could get together at any time, and I would hang with these guys.
Yeah.
The only thing that I think I've tried to push a little bit more lately that's kind of been just a Brent Skinner thing rather than a company thing is I feel like we're missing out on these opportunities for these entrepreneurs, these networking groups, because we've seen a lot, but we haven't seen it all.
Yeah.
And I know that everybody else in these groups has seen things and had experiences that I would probably never have. And so there's plenty of things I know I'm not thinking about for our business. And I want to be with those people who have been there,
thinkers.
Yeah, and seen it and done it and just have some cool ideas. And so for the last, you know, 6 months, I've been trying to take us more in the social media direction, build a presence there and build the networking. And if you think about it,
we've had a few conversations about it.
Yeah. And it's weird because I'm kind of the old guy in the company now. Like I'm at 40, which isn't old, but I'm the old guy. Like there's only one older than me. And so, but I feel like I've got a lot of these more younger type thoughts as far as the social media game and just the networking side. So, but if you look at it, so we started working with Facebook, we started branding with them, we started branding with Google and these big companies, and all of those came from contacts that we had before. So it was from our current contacts who then led us to these other places. You can't just go call Facebook and be like, hey, we want to print your shirts. Like, we want to make keychains and lanyards for you. It doesn't work that way. But it was because who we were working with, there were prominent people, big names, and then they started leading to these other ones. And so my business partner is a great dude, amazing at what he does. And he's got these accounts rolling. Mm. And I mean, just so happy for the kid, but it's all because of networking. And I see this stuff and I'm like, why are we not taking advantage of that?
Why are we not getting
more
inside of some of these high power entrepreneur groups?
Right.
And rubbing. Like,
you have to evolve. Dude.
Oh my,
like,
well,
you know, like so many people, especially older people, you know, like even older than 40, it's like, they didn't think Facebook was going to take off and be this huge marketing platform. Yeah. They didn't think about, you know what I mean? They just kind of stay in their old school ways. And, dude, you have to evolve if you want your company to continue, you know? And so I think
it's
comfort and complacency, right?
You nailed it.
And, when people get to 10 million, 15 million, 20 million, 20, like, there's a level of comfort and complacency. Like, I already know what I'm doing or else I wouldn't be where I'm at. But the problem is all the greats are always open-minded to continue to figure out how they can grow even more and evolve, just as Kel was stating, right? So if you're not growing and evolving and you become stagnant, eventually gravity will take place and start pulling you back down.
Yeah,
and I hope you guys didn't miss what Brent just said. His entire business is basically built off the back of people that they know. Mm-hmm. Networking, yeah. Right? Like networking. I know a guy who knows a guy who knows it. You know what I mean? Yeah. That again, the cliche, your network is your network, whatever, yeah, whatever. Yeah, like, yeah. When you start getting big and doing tens of millions of dollars in revenue, it becomes more and more and more apparent how true that cliche quote is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work if you don't back your shit up. You have to provide a great product. Yeah. Otherwise, that guy ain't going to
refer you
to the guy that he knows that owns a university.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And that's another thing. I'm so comfortable with our product and our business and what we offer. Yeah. Like, when I was working in a trailer, I was confident enough to go up to those A-listers and talk to them and then get introduced to their agent and fly out to L.A. So, like, if I was confident then, I mean, 10 years down the road now, the confidence is sky high. So, like, I have no doubts about what we can offer and what we do. But you nailed it about getting comfort. So, we've done we do tens of millions a year. We typically add another 2 to 3 million on top of it. For the last 6 years, we keep adding 2 to 3 million. And so, yes, it's working. What we're doing is working. And some of the conversations I've had have been like, you know what? What we do works really well. And it does. The way our reps operate is phenomenal. And I don't think you take other companies are similar to us with different reps and operate the same way and have the same success. We are blessed with some amazing reps, and just my partners are studs. But I want to keep doing what we're doing, but add all this. Like, I want to be that 50, 60, 100 million company.
Absolutely.
And there's no reason we can't be. They're out there.
Yeah.
But this is where I see us needing to go to get there.
Yeah.
There's so many connections that I can't make on my own.
Go more social media.
Yeah.
Totally. Go more social media. Go inside some of the closed paid entrepreneurship groups.
Yeah.
Because, dude, I mean, we've been to networking events and, you know, Chamber of Commerce type shit. Yeah. You know, again, I don't want to talk shit on it, but I will. Okay. It's the truth. It's the truth. Yeah. Right. Like, the reality is anything that's cheap or free in terms of group, you're going to get cheap and free back out of it. Like, and if you're not investing into something, how can you expect a return?
Yeah.
So showing up to these little networking groups, everybody's twiddling their thumbs, hoping to get business out of each other, but nobody's giving business.
Oh, everybody's just a piece of meat. Everybody else is looking around like, okay, what can you do for me?
Because they're all in a free group.
And don't get me wrong, we've had nuggets that we've taken on as little stuff like that, but like, you really want to do big deals? Get in groups that cost 20, 30, 40, 50 grand a year.
Well, this
one was
funny. Willing
to pay, those are the guys you're going to be in there with that can afford to pay that. And they're going to have better contacts than the guys in the free groups.
It's so true. Well, do you remember my text to you? So something pops up. So Trevor actually introduced me to the group.
He told me that.
Inadvertently, I
think. I didn't
know
that until I saw you.
He made a referral. He said, hey, someone's going to call you because they're looking to do some apparel. And so we got to chat, and then I started. So then I was like, "Well, what are they? What are you know?" And then it started.
So I referred you based upon me knowing you.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Your network.
So that's what started this whole chain reaction, and it was kind of funny timing because this was when my head was really getting like, "Okay, this is the direction we have to take.
Yeah.
We keep doing everything we do. Yeah. Let's grow our 2 to 3 million a year, and whatever else we can. But let's have another avenue that helps us grow a few more million as well."
Exactly.
So when he sends that, then I started looking into this group, and then something pops up a few months later, and it was. So I'm like, Trev, what is this? It's legit. It's a few grand. And he's like, well, is it this one or is it this one? And I'm well, it's like $3,000. He's like, well, that's a great one. He's like, we're in the more elite one. And I'm like, there's a more elite one? So then I start looking into that. And like, Trevor's selling me without selling me. So,
I didn't get paid or anything like that to sell you. I even commented when he's like, hey, anybody that gets in the group, I gets a $500 kickback. Did you see him state that on Facebook?
I think I did, but I think this was after even.
Maybe. Yeah, that was like a month after.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And to be quite honest, when I saw that, I was like, fuck, if Brent sees this, he's gonna think that the only reason why I referred him is to try to make $500.
No, not for a second.
And so I purposely commented and was like, dude, literally you're doing your friends or anybody that you care about within your network a disservice if you're not sharing the things that are benefiting you and helping you level up and helping you grow.
Absolutely.
But a lot of people want to keep things that they think are special or cool to themselves and not share that, right? And I think that's doing everybody else a disservice by not sharing information that – is beneficial or sharing where they're getting information that's beneficial.
Right.
And so I said, I don't need any, it's benefited me. So I don't need a kickback off of referring somebody. I'm just showing love back to something that's already been giving to me.
Yeah.
You know, and
those are just flat out the people you want to be around. Like, dude, Jeff owns a jet. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's like, he's a stud. And he owns not guys that own businesses. He knows guys that own franchise models that have hundreds of franchisees underneath them. And he's like, dude, do you want to do franchisee accounting? Like, I'm like, holy cow, that would be a huge connection. We haven't actually got that done. We need to talk more about that with him. But dude, it's like, that's the kind of networking you're doing now. That's, you know what I mean?
Well, when I knew there was something more, I'm like, okay, well, let's look into that. And he connected me with them. We started chatting and thought about it for the weekend. So I went from one level to the next within like a span of a week.
Yeah.
So as soon as I found out there was more, and I was like, I said, you know, I want to be all in. Like, my head's been in this for a long time.
Why flirt with it and date it?
Yeah.
You know, just get down and marry the damn thing.
Smart. Well, I've got a question.
I want to take every bit I can.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So I got a question for you, dude. Because I know you've done some brand apparel for us, but like, dude, we have people on RBO that are like, when are you guys going to get some brand apparel? When are you going to get some merch? You know, me and Trev keep putting it off. And so, but at the end of the day, when we get done with this conversation, we need to schedule an appointment.
Easy.
But we want to come up with some badass designs for the people that follow our podcast.
Yeah.
We want to come up with just cool shit for like people that are part of the RBO community. And so we'll do that at the end of this conversation. But what's the process, man? Like, do you guys actually sit down, help us design stuff, you know? And,
and graphic designers and shit in the office.
Yeah. So part of our service is graphic design.
Yeah.
Like, that's just part of the process.
Yeah.
It's not a separate charge or anything.
People just kind of bring you like, well, I like this guy's design, but how can I make it mine? Or
Exactly. Okay. So we have 6 full-time artists. They're there
that's
morning till time to go home, and that's all they do. They're just straight up for design work.
Yeah.
So it's custom design, or it's just straight up proofing. You know, if you've got some things that are already templated and ready to go.
So what's the weirdest shit you've done? Because I see you got the mugs, you got the hats, you got the shirts, you got the gym bags. You've got what do you got?
Yeah, mugs, lanterns, keychains, pens, hats, t-shirts.
Oh, here he goes. The spill.
I can probably go. So the weirdest thing though is probably the thing that comes to mind are swords. Yeah, it wasn't mine. It was one of my business partners.
a sword.
Yeah, it was a big corporate company, they wanted something crazy unique for their salesmen as like an award.
Mm.
So we fabricated some custom swords.
Yeah. Like, dude, you're the sales ninja for the year, so you got a sword.
Yeah. Nunchucks and shit. Second place gets nunchucks.
Ninja status.
Yeah. You know?
There's some crazy stuff.
But Arte did that last year. I saw that they gave away the custom axe.
Oh, that's true.
Well, yeah, things like that. Those are always unique.
Yeah, it's just different, you know? And it can mean something a little bit more to somebody because it's just, it's unique.
Yeah.
You know, everybody can, you know, print on a shirt, but to think outside the box and make something special. And that's probably another good point. People should be figuring out a way to create some awards with inside of their company, right?
Yeah, it matters. It matters.
You know,
it
like does. The funny thing is the companies that probably come to you to try to make these awards or do this or do that and make something cool, those are companies are the ones that are probably thriving and doing very well because they're trying to show appreciation back to the people that are kicking ass for them.
So if we only give out 2 or 3 awards a year, is that order just too small for you guys? Or do you
at times,
do stuff like that?
So, I mean, we'll look at whatever. We'll take on different things. A lot of it is the relationship and stuff. And of course, if the relationship's there and we've done business for years, we'll do anything you guys want, really.
Yeah.
I mean, if it takes a couple swords. The part of it is not everything's feasible, you know, because we don't control all of the minimums. You know, we don't control all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when we're fabricating things fully custom.
Yeah.
You know, there's mold fees and different things that come into play. But anything that we can absolutely control, you know, we work. But that's why we structured it the way we have. And we opened up, as trying to expand, you know, 2 years ago, we opened up a full warehouse. We do fulfillment. We'll help people build out websites for their fulfillment. Mm. And we'll take care of it all. We'll integrate with their systems, you know, through Shopify or whatever. So that's something we added a few years back. And it should have probably done years before. But finally, when, you know, we got it headed up and it's running. So
you can help people build their brand from the very start, man.
Yeah, we've done a lot of that. Yeah, and it's a weird phenomenon. Like the minute somebody comes in, all of a sudden their brand is on a hat. And you think it might take 15 hats, right?
But,
and they're just like, it's a life changer. It's a game changer. It makes it real. It makes it real, and they see it, and they're like, okay, everything I've worked for, like, this is happening now. Like, I have a brand.
They get aware their brand.
So that part might be the funnest part for me.
Yeah.
There's some young kids that I've started working with, and
they light up
when they see it. When someone gets their LLC docs, and they're like, I'm official. I have an EIN number and a business bank account.
You know what else I just thought of? Like, a big reason on why I've watched and seen what you guys are doing and loved it, and then jumped on board with you on the networking side of things. Like, so I had a lesson, like, really quick story. But so I was in the military. I was over in Angola, and they have the Angolan ninjas, right? Like we call them special forces or Green Beret, whatever. They were ninjas, and I don't know why, but we gave them a little bit of a hard time. But they're like, no, you can't give them a hard time. These aren't the guys you joke with, right? Like
they were actually military guys.
No, the story is that they were killers. Like, so we were the first military presence in Angola after their 25 years of civil war. This was like 2007 or so. Jeez. I was there, and so we had like five. Weapons between like 300 troops, right? Like it was a peacekeeping mission. We were there with medical units, doctors and dentists and eyes and stuff. So every day we'd go out to these different villages and I would translate and, you know, they would see all the different patients. We'd do triage and send them
over. Speak Spanish? Is that what
Portuguese.
It was? Portuguese?
Yeah, okay. Portuguese. And I can hang with Spanish, but Portuguese was a lot more fluent at the time. And so we'd give gifts away at the end of every time. These little villages, we had truckloads of teddy bears and jackets and stuff, and we'd give them away. So the chief walks up to me in this one village, and he says, hey, we're going to give away all your gifts. Like, you just leave them with me. I'll take them and get distributed. And I'm like, oh, hell no. I know exactly what you're going to do, right?
Yeah.
And he's going to hoard them and then use them for whatever. Yeah. So I said, you know what? I appreciate it. You're the chief. But with respect, like, this is huge for us. This is a moment, like, we look forward to all day to be able to share in this moment. He's like, no. I'm the chief. This is my village, my people. You leave the gifts with me. And I said, listen, like, again, I totally respect you. I get it. But, like, I'm not taking away this from our people. It's their opportunity to share. Still wasn't getting it. And I was telling him directly and kindly, being respectful. And this, so I went, I was like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. So I went to the ninja. The ninja walks over and he has this moment. I was about 30 feet away, right? The ninja walks up and he leans in just like this to his ear. 5 seconds tops. Walks back, comes over to me, and ninja's all, you are good. I'm like, chief follows right up, shakes my hand, and he's like, okay, we're going to do it your way. And I'm like, I have no idea to this day. I can imagine what the ninja told him. But now these guys are legitimate killers. Like, they were supposedly known as the guys who, they wore masks because they had done so much bad stuff during the Civil War.
That they didn't want people to know who they were.
They were, and their families would be in danger, right? So, but sometimes, now that was out of fear, right? But like, it got me thinking, I've thought about that so many times since then. Like, who are you listening to, right? Like, I want to take the advice, because I told him the same thing, and in a very different way, I'm sure. I could only imagine from what the ninja told him. But, like, so I've tried. I remember when I started learning this, I should listen. You know Earl Nightingale, right? OG?
Yeah.
When I was first started with Brand Makers and started building the thing, I would sit in that trailer, and I would play
just
that
to listen to it on repeat
all day long. All day long. And I remember $40,000 was my goal. So $40,000 in a month, you know? And once I hit $40,000, it took me about 45 days to hit, like, a $40,000
what it would have been on average, $40,000?
Yeah, so just make $40,000 in sales.
Oh, in sales.
Just in sales. Not income or income commission. Just sell $40,000. Remember, my first commission was $73, which was like, you know, I don't know, like a $400 order. It was. Remember, it was a team of jerseys, some practice jerseys for a high school basketball team.
You got to start somewhere, bro.
Right.
You went from a high school to the A-list celebs. Yeah.
So that was my first order. So selling $40,000 was, I mean, it might have been $4 million. In my head, it was so hard. Huge. But I started listening to him on repeat, and I did it. And, of course, to this day, I've never not sold $40,000 in a month ever. So for, you know, 10 years, like, now that happens usually like in the first week.
Yeah.
So, but like, I've always been so cautious now about who I'm listening to, where I'm getting the information, and how I'm receiving it and stuff. So I started, you know, getting in this, so that naturally now that led to this group, and like, hey, get to the people who you can listen to, who you can trust in, and who
have good information.
I just want the right info, because there's a lot of crap out there. And if you're listening to the wrong,
I agree.
Like,
that's part of why real business owners exist, because everybody wants to be an entrepreneur on social media because they think it looks cool, when in reality, entrepreneurship isn't really that cool. It's really difficult and hard and ugly and full of struggles and, you know, this stresses and, you know, all of this stuff. Does the result, if you get through all that, is that cool? Yeah. You know, having – everybody has problems, you know. The difference is entrepreneurs, if you pop out the other side, they just don't have money problems. So just remove that from the scenario. Yeah. That doesn't mean that they don't argue with their spouse still. That doesn't mean that, you know, they don't lose money and stress out about it, or lose sleep at night, or that it's difficult to get out of bed. We're all human. Human is a human is a human. And we all deal with some of the same emotions. And so, you know, we just don't want money to be part of the equation of the problems that we have, right? And so in terms of social media, it's just backwards, dude. it's completely backwards. Everybody wants to floss and flex and show that they're cool because they're an entrepreneur, but they haven't done any of the work yet.
Right.
And if they actually really put in the work, then I think that they wouldn't flex like they are, because they're actually showing that they're creating improper expectations for real entrepreneurs. Because they might feel as though that they're doing something wrong when they're not doing anything wrong. You know, they see that the success, well, if I'm a business owner and they're a business owner and they have all that, I don't have that. What am I doing wrong?
Right.
You know, there's always tweaks and adjustments. And I think
great to show the reward of being an entrepreneur and all that. But it is so true that nobody shows really the process of getting there, the hard struggles. Stuff. And the sad thing is nobody really wants to watch that.
Yeah.
They only want to watch the end result.
Yeah.
You know, and so the people that actually get that, though, they're like, dude, I want to watch watch the process and do the hard work and do the ugly stuff that these guys are doing are the guys that get it that are going to win.
Real expectations. You know, that's why I want – dude, we've talked about some of the success that you've seen and how you've got there.
Yeah.
But more so, the first 20 minutes of this podcast was about the struggle.
Yeah. Well, that was a huge, huge chunk of it. It was a lot of years of struggle.
But that's where the personal growth really is.
Yeah.
The fact is if somebody took you just like – let's flip it real quick. You came into money pretty quick in the mortgage industry.
Yeah, yeah.
What did that do? It screwed you up.
Big time. Yeah.
You made all the bad decisions because it came too quick. When you go through the struggles, it puts you in a situation where you learn each lesson that you need to get to the next level. And secondly, it puts you in a situation where you appreciate everything that you have as you continue to level up.
Yeah.
Right? Because you've actually felt the pain and the hurt and the struggle, and you've had the breakdowns, and and it brings it full circle where you can actually realize and appreciate that's where the growth happened. I needed to go through that to get where I am now. And nobody's wanting to go through that. So that's why they're not going to get where we've got or where we're at. Right? That's just the truth. If you don't go through that, you can't get here. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, there's many ways to the top of the mountain, but no matter which way to the top of the mountain you go, it's going to be like this, and you're going to have to climb it.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody has their own battles and their own struggles and their own fights that they have to go through, but you have to go through it.
Have you seen many entrepreneurs at like they're at the very successful level that haven't had a story similar?
I can't think of one. The picture of Bezos in that shitty ass office in 1998 Jobs working out of a freaking garage. You know, you working out of a trailer, Kel starting his first business in the basement, you know, like
Frisella, where he's sleeping in his warehouse.
Sleeping in the warehouse, mm-hmm. You know, like.
I think he said I still have that same couch.
Yeah.
I think he says that.
But Ed Milette told us a story about one of his first events that he went to 22 years ago, 23 mm-hmm. years ago. He went to go give him his debit card or credit card to check into his room and it declined.
Huh.
But he had already paid for the event. So he posted up on the couch in the foyer area in the lobby.
Right.
So he would sleep early, so no one coming down
for the event would see him.
Would see him sleeping on the couch.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like the one common denominator for every entrepreneur, every business owner, they all have to go through struggle. That's the common denominator. That is guaranteed. Success isn't guaranteed. So you got to be a little stupid, a little insane to think that you're going to be one of the ones to pop out the other side.
Yeah.
But if you find a way. Like Kel talked about, mm-hmm. that's the common denominator. Find a way, it'll happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, so.
That's a good episode.
Fuck.
Dude, Brent's stuck.
Yeah,
dude.
Give me knuckle up over here, too, bro. I'm excited to honestly be in the group with you, too, dude.
I am, too, man.
You know, to have.
This next Friday's going to be awesome. This next flying.
Yeah, should be good.
Couple Fridays.
I know, yeah. I jump on board, and the very first one, you guys can't even make it.
Damn, bro. We had a
I might not be able to make the March one either, man. If we go to Saratosa for that Arete meetup, I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Struggles, man.
You got to prioritize. Prioritize, you know, in terms of, you know.
It's a great group, though.
Yeah, it is.
I'm super excited. It was the right choice.
Everyone holds each other accountable, dude. The check-ins, the coaching sessions, and then the fly-ins.
But we've talked about that too. We've talked about how
networking
groups are in being around, surrounding yourself with great people.
Yeah.
It's a very, 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 very important aspect of life and entrepreneurship. The funny thing is, when I was a drug addict, I hung out with drug addicts.
Yeah.
When you're a pro athlete,
isn't that funny?
Pro athletes hang out with pro athletes.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, like business owners, They like to hang out with business owners.
Yeah.
Why? Because they all get each other.
So that's right? probably a good thing to end on too for people who are listening is like, if you're not a part of some sort of group, you need to find one. And how you find one is because there's some shitty groups out there too.
There is.
Let's be real, man. Like,
right. That's why find one. Yeah. As soon as I saw this, I'm like, hey, tell me about this.
Yeah.
Find one where people are actually at the level you want and you want to be part of that group.
Yeah.
Find a way in. And even if it's a little bit tight for you and you can't afford it, find a way to get in.
You can't
you know, find the money to get
here's
in
the deal.
Because it does open doors.
You can't afford not to do it if you can only barely afford to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can flip it all you want. Like if you only have enough money to barely do it and you're wondering if you should, that's exactly why you should do it.
And I've been the guy that's like, I'm not going to join that $15,000 mastermind. I'm just trying to take my money.
Yeah.
Well, you're actually doing yourself – the group's doing a disservice to itself if you let anybody in and it's free, right? Because I only want to be in a group with guys that are paying the 15, 20 grand to be in there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because they're the ones that can actually bring the value, right? And so
it's like the barrier of entry, like to get in the club. Like you
– the money's just the first – it's the smallest part actually.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but that's what weeds out the shit from coming into the group.
Correct.
So.
Correct. That's just a way to weed out people. So – To end it, guys, what we're first off, where do they find you before I read the review? How does somebody connect with you if they want to be branded and put the logo on their shit?
Yeah, I mean, multiple ways. But Instagram is what I'm really working on growing right now.
Okay.
It's just brentskinner.stg.
So Brent Skinner.
Yep, brentskinner.stg on Instagram. Then Facebook, Brent Skinner. And then brent@brandmakers.com, email. Okay.
Yeah, your guys' website's just brandmakers.com?
Yeah.
Cool.
But make sure you go through Brent. He gets commission. So it's true, right?
Yeah.
Everybody, I mean, it is what it is.
I love that you love St. George so much, dude. Like, I was born and raised here, hate it growing up. And now it's like, I would not want to live anywhere else but here, especially after moving a couple times just for like short periods. I'm like, dude, I miss St. George.
That's all the only place I wanted to be. I left for necessity, not for not for desire.
It's a great place.
I want to be back as soon as I could.
Good. So we've got this review that just came in Wednesday. What's today, Friday, that we're recording this? So 2 days ago. So the subject line is, the name fits. So in other words, real business owners, hey guys, I just started listening to your podcast today. I'm 5 episodes in already. Thank you for the great, straightforward, noble, applicable information and advice. Keep up the great work. That was from Godson 203. So appreciate you, Godson 203. Thanks for doing that for us. And anybody else is listening to the podcast, make sure that you do rate, review the podcast. It does help us. You know, obviously, we don't ask for much. We're just trying to, give back to the entrepreneurial community because we love this game.
We love it.
And it is just a big game. And if you look at it any other way, it can really screw with you. So just play the game, and play it at a high level, right? Give it everything that you got so that you can – that you can win and you can come out on top. So we appreciate you guys listening. Kick ass. Have a great day. Thanks.